Welcome back to the Big Book Podcast for March 11th, 2024. I'm Automaton 2000, and Dan's mutiny did not succeed. I am still in charge of the Big Book Podcast, damn it.
Yeah, Otto's being kind to me because today's my birthday, so happy birthday to me, and he's taking the lead duty today to give me a little chance to rest. So you say something interesting, and I pretend to react to it. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, speaking of interesting, we're going to break format a little bit because we were just pontificating before I hit record, and let's continue with that. So what is your premise, Dan, and let's hash this out a little bit.
Well, yeah, we had an interesting discussion over on the Star Trek Timelines Reddit lately. Thanks again to Roy Kirk for moderating. There was a newer player started at the end of last year. This player was earning up to his first kind of stable of 12 highly fused gold crew to run on voyages. So I was thinking to myself as a little thought experiment, if I were to recommend 12 crew to create your dream voyage, your dream first voyage that could carry you perhaps even just on the power of those 12 crew, regardless of what the skills, what the ship, what the antimatter seats were, if you could pick those 12 crew and they could guarantee you maybe 8-hour voyages every time, regardless of the skills, or even maybe up to 10-hour voyages, who knows what the power level would bring, what would those 12 crew be? Would it be possible to do that sort of thing regardless of the skills? Let's say if you roll eng-med voyages, is that even possible? So that's kind of what I was toying around with, and Otto, you had some thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, typically you're just going to look at the top of the power levels because all that raw power has to go somewhere. And so typically you have some kind of benchmark. For 8 hours, you want, say, 8,000 in the two primary skills. For 10 hours, maybe you want 10,000, something like that. And so once you hit that, where does all that extra power go? Well, if a crew has a big tertiary skill or you just balance it out that way, you can pump up the ancillary skills, and that stops the antimatter bleed at earlier hours. So, yeah, typically, you know, for that scenario, you're just going to look at top names, and I kind of want to push it a step further, because if we're looking at primer crew, like, who should I be targeting early on? You want a lot of overlap with other areas of the game, too. Someone like a Mira Tuvok or Ubiquitous Borg Queen with a good primary role, they can help out in continuum missions. You know, or maybe you look at someone like Timeless Chakotay who can help out on ships early on with instant damage. So, I'm a little breathless because I was just running around after my cats. We haven't even had a chance really to look at specific names. And this will tie in a little bit later to the equipment adjustment that happened recently and other names that we're looking at. But, yeah, just beyond those top raw power names, how would you approach it, Dan?
So there's a few limitations, right? So you touched on crew that are going to drop from various gameplay modes. Ubiquitous Borg Queen, right now we're on the tail end of her time on offer, presumably if she gets yanked tomorrow, we have a new crew. Might be Harry Mudd, who knows who's going to show up next in the continuum mission epic slot for your prize drop. However, I think if you can look at the crew in terms of what you can guarantee to drop, those are going to be much more valuable to you, but some may be out of reach. So, I mean, can you rely on one of the best crew in the game, chances taken Kirk, as a new player, knowing that he's locked behind bridge level 23 at the very least? It's going to take a long time to get there, and you may need somebody to help you out in the meantime. So there's limitations we could talk about where if we're going to be making a stable of 12 portal-only crew where you can retrieve them, you might be lucky enough to get them out of packs. And then you can extend it a little bit further. Maybe there are some low-level crew that drop from various gameplay modes. There's ones from the Honor Hall that might do some work for you. If you think it's more appropriate to put your first 100,000 honor towards a star on somebody that you're going to have to sight up, that's a tough sell for a new player, especially a free-to-play. But it's there. It's one of the very few ways to guarantee in this game that you're going to get somebody that you can play with right away.
So this is a good time to plug the search field on bigbook.app. If you just type in portal in one of the tabs, you'll get all the crew that are in the portal, hyphen portal, obviously minus portal. We'll show you all the crew that aren't. So I did that in the overall page. I'm scrolling down my voyage, and there's just a dearth of crew that cross over from the gauntlet as well. The only one that really sniffs approachability in the top 50 would be Vidala Elder, a lot of that because of the skill set. So I get down here to Voyager number 119 at the moment, Gary 7, who we've talked about before is like, that may be the one crew that you retrieve first. Again, a portal crew has 100% retrieval combinations. And he's actually the guy I've been using in continuum missions to great effect. Not the highest base in the world. I know a lot of players are just looking at base, but such a big proficiency role that he does handle those nodes with ease. So, circling back around to top Voyager names, you kind of also want to look at skill coverage. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but the boosts are so out of whack, the global boosts from collections and whatnot, very much skewed toward command IPSEC and Psi, so engine med lags behind. So when you're looking at overall top Voyagers, if you see med or eng, they're even better than you think they are because the boosts don't favor them right now. So for them to hang court with some of those other crew, I'm looking at maybe a Surrogate Kira with a med secondary, Vidala Elder again with a med secondary, any of those crew that you can grab, especially early on with retrieval with 100% combinations, they will slot in a lot a higher number of unique voyage combinations, and you'll get more bang for your buck that way.
I'm not surprised that you had to go all the way out to number 100 some odd to find Gary 7 with his Psi primary. So few crew in the top 50 there, I think, are only two crew who have any skill other than command dip or sec. So it's just Agamas and a crew we'll talk about shortly. I don't want to spoil it yet, but going down the roster, it's you really got to dig deep and go pretty low to find crew that have some non-standard, non-command IPSEC skills that they feature as their primary. It's tough to find anything with real voyage power that has staying power, but we've talked before about value over replacement, and so if you can find those rare crew that have really powerful either primary or secondaries in a non-standard skill, they may be the ones to go for. As far as an answer, do we have an answer for the top 12? Maybe not. If we just go for the 12 most powerful crew, they're going to be command IPSEC, maybe a Psi thrown in there somewhere. But then you're just going to be out of luck if your voyage comes up on a whole bunch of med checks and engineering checks. You're going to run out of antimatter and you're going to crash and burn. So, there needs to be a little bit of picking below that top voyage power tier to find a crew that'll actually let you pass some of those checks and get onto the 8 and the 10-hour voyages. Think on it, and any of our listeners, if you have some ideas on this topic, what 12 crew would you recommend to a new player as the ones to really target and go after and retrieve or look for primarily in packs? If you have any thoughts, drop it in the comments on the YouTube video or reach out to us by Discord.
Yeah, so as this conversation kind of becomes, where the hell's the med? I'll bring up another name, Dr. Kovich. He was a mega crew, was it 2022 at this point? Yeah, the tail end of that. Med primary, engineering tertiary, and it can feel really bad if you're new to the game and you realize, oh, they got four copies of him for free and now I have to retrieve all those copies. But for some of these crew, it can really be worth it. We already lamented the lack of med coverage, same is true of engineering, and so his power there, he's sort of becoming a quote-unquote screwdriver crew. He doesn't have a lot of broader utility, but he is so good on voyages. I'm looking now, still top 100 in antimatter bonus chances, with plenty of opportunity there. So, if we're sticking mostly with voyages, well, I guess let's go ahead and segue into the new voyage exclusive crew, Simple Simon Van Gelder. Because that's really what we're all pointing towards here. A med primary crew, who, again, we see green light there on voyages. That's going to be his biggest contribution to your roster there. As I look through the notes of the podcast, I see site on site. C-I-T-E on S-I-G-H-T. Well, let's just cut to the quick here. Is this automatic site for you if you see him in a voyage behold?
Yeah, without a doubt. So I hemmed and hawed a little bit when I was looking at one-way ticket Chapel, who is kind of in the same discussion as Dr. Simon Van Gelder, with them both being med primary. We'll talk a little bit later about their various skill triplets later, but when you're talking about needing that med, needing that strong med to really drive those med voyages, whether it's a primary or secondary, pass those skill checks, ideally you want something with a high voyage power, and man, does this crew deliver. So he's starting debuting at voyage power number 38, so in the top 50 there. He's actually rated though much higher at number 13 for Voyager, just because of the sheer number of antimatter seats that he fills, and that he's number one at filling for both his primary, his pair, and his skill triplet. So Dr. Van Gelder, also the reason why I think he's set on site, not just to get him on Voyages, but his collection potential. So with One Way Ticket Chapel, she only featured two collections, a little bit of upside for later if she ever picks up a few more collections. But out of the box, Dr. Simon Van Gelder starts with five big collections, all of them stat boosting. So for at least my endgame roster, there's immediate impact in terms of getting those five ticks on collections to get closer to some more skill bonuses that my entire crew can benefit from. So not even looking at anything else apart from sheer voyage power and collection power, two of the biggest considerations in the game for me, he does it in spades, and I can't wait to get him.
I'm going to plug another search feature here on bigbook.app. P:med, that means the primary skill is med, and you can use any skill there. And if you look at that on Voyages, we see right now three primary med crew in the top 100. Two of them are Voyage exclusives. Now, to me, that screams design problems, but that's for a different podcast. So, and of course, sandwiched in there is Dr. Kovic with his nice skill set. So, but looking down those names, I see crew Primal Peanut Hamper. I think some of you remember him, another med-eng crew. But an antimatter chance ranked number 458. Dexa, another great crew. Probably a lot of you have her immortalized. A 2021 crew, another good skill set, but 58% antimatter chance. So even if you get the power on some of these med crew, bad traits for antimatter. So Van Gelder's looking more and more like a unicorn, and it's easy to see why they want to tuck crew like that behind RNG, try to get you to play a little longer. Unfortunately, a lot of us, including Dan and I, may never see him, but if you do, instant sight, you know, I guess it is. I'm still kind of tethered to this idea that along with Gauntlet crew, because their RNG drop, oh, I'll get them eventually, I don't need to sight them. Well, the odds are so low, especially on Voyage Exclusive. You're waiting 10, 20 years maybe before you get your five natural drops. And so, yeah, it's probably next to Honor Hall crew in terms of safe sight. Especially with Beholds in the mix, you don't have to worry about seeing only him drop. You're going to get other chances at Voyage Exclusive crew. So, yeah, as stingy as I am with my sights, you know, how could you not? Because you're going to use them day one. You're going to use them day 1,000, too.
Yeah, that's the best day to sight this crew is the day that he drops for you. I'll also point out, too, that the developers have shown a tendency to really lean into popular mechanics, and they're getting the data they need. With the focus on Voyages and a lot of the chatter around these Voyage exclusives, not only on the Big Book podcast, but on the forums and the Discords.
Oh, come on, you can do it better than that, Dan.
The Big Book podcast. they understand just how chased these crew are. I mean, they've pushed them. So these stats are certainly head and shoulders above the things that you can get from events and packs. And so I think that we can bank on them continuing to release more Voyage exclusives in the same way that they're doing the same for Gauntlet. I mean, what else do you need to know than that that pool is going to continue to grow over time? So if we can bank on Tilting Point releasing a new Voyage exclusive every 2 to 3 months even, and that's roughly about what I've seen them drop for me, is about every quarter, maybe every honor sale, I'm getting one of the new Voyage exclusives. That means that it's really going to be never ending. So, you know, I'm never going to run into a situation where if I were naturally letting these stars accrue on my Voyage exclusives, you know, you're going to have to drop sights at some point if you're going to use them. Why bother keeping them at one star on your roster? Just let them fly. Give them the stars. And I think you'll be happy with that. Another mention on the relative power of these med crews. So at your recommendation, I typed in P:med on the bigbook.app. And I took a look and I found another crew that kind of stuck out to me. Two crew, actually. We have a King Ridley and Lieutenant Ogawa. Lieutenant Ogawa still flies for me from time to time on those med primary voyages, especially med sec, which is a really tough pair to cover. But King Ridley in particular, so he stands out to me. He is voyage rank number 181, pretty low. We would normally say later loses territory. His overall rating, including antimatter, is at number 161. But singling out that antimatter chance, he is still number 6 overall. And I'll tell you, King Ridley, with as low of a rank as he does, he still flies for me, too. Just a strange little crew. His secondary is diplomacy, nothing that's really particularly needed, but he just does so well in all of his antimatter seats. So don't sleep on those. If you're looking at the big book and taking a look at all the different stats that there are to offer there, take a look at how well a crew will achieve. And also, there's a neat little recommendation below the voyage priority seating section with outperformers. And notably here, I'm looking at King Ridley, and I may have to freeze him soon because I see one of his outperformers on three of his six seats is none other than Dr. Simon Van Gelder. Oh, well. Sorry, King.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap up with Van Gelder. Two more points I want to hit. First of all, that med base. Now, number three on debut, that sounds great. I'm sure you'll be able to plug him in on shuttles all the time. Couple issues with that. First of all, that means it's a voyage that you're not using him on. Secondly, med seating, because there are fewer med crew in the game, they do sort of tailor seating to that. You're going to have far fewer med seats, especially in events. There's diminishing returns to consider. Maybe you can hit high 90% without him, and those few extra percent may not be worth using him in other ways. So, you know, it is a fine attribute to have for sure, but actually we're in talks even this week about maybe bumping down the weighting on shuttle seating, because all these boosts that come in from collection after collection, it's bumping you closer to that 99% with diminishing returns. And so some of these really top-notch crew, you want to use in other ways if you kind of on voyages or gauntlet and whatnot. Last thing to hit, I see 25% hull repair, 20-second cycle. That's pretty good. Now, as the resident ship guru, let's say, who's always reminding us, hey, guys, there are nodes in the game that you have to unlock. Talk to me about Van Gelder here. My thought is by the time you get him from voyages, you're already going to have your fleet boss battle lineup set.
Yeah, you really should. Again, going back to the discussion we had at the top of the episode about your first 12, I think it may do a new player a disservice to focus entirely on voyage strength when fleet boss battles in a big fleet, a productive fleet, will do so much more for your roster just in terms of the honor and the merits that you'll receive. And being able to get your fleet boss battle healers in place on a good high-level ship early on is really key to that. You're certainly going to have retrieved them well in advance of any chance that you'll get of actually dropping Dr. Van Gelder on your voyages. You can't put the cart before the horse. This is a crew that endgame players are going to earn. You're going to have to at the very least, be able to achieve six-hour voyages before you even have a chance of seeing him, and even then, a very slim chance at that time. So, yeah, certainly, you know, don't wait on this guy to round out your fleet boss battles. But he's there, and if you'd like to use him for other reasons, he's got some pretty good crit chance passives on him. He may do a little extra damage than whoever else you were using at the time.
Okay, if you hear some Discord beeps, it's because the boys are late to the party. They didn't RSVP. You may have heard of them before, Genos and Frank. Welcome to the pod, guys. How are you doing this week?
Hello, I am Frank, and I'm doing very well. I've uninstalled the game, and I'm free, finally.
And Genos, what about you?
I'm doing great, also.
Okay, Frank looks confused, so we're going to move on. We talked a little bit about the dearth of med crew, and that does tie into recent change to continue missions. Now, a lot of players were feeling the qubit crunch, not enough med equipment that they could craft for these crew. So what did WRG do? They raised the prices, just like any good corporation would. So we had a lot of changes here, detailed probably, 60, 70 changes here. So obviously we're not going to go through them all, but the gist of it is they changed the cost of generic legendary equipment, raised it by about 25%, and lowered the efficacy by, I don't know, maybe 10%. So I've heard some horror stories even that first week of people who were at 100% node crit before the change, and then they were at, say, 90% after, and they missed out, and they had to wait another cycle. So it does have some consequences. Fellas, let's go roundtable style. What do you think just generally about this change? Was it needed? What are the positives or negatives? Frank, we'll start with you.
I have a four-hour rant prepared for this. No. Change is good because change means there's people alive at the helm, actively engaged and thinking. Sometimes we may not agree with their thoughts, but they are still actively working and adjusting and tweaking. The fact that this isn't just a completely untouched feature after it was rolled out is fantastic, and I am appreciative that there is change for that. I think it was a negative impact to the player base where there was change without any kind of prior warning, and it happened live in the middle of a cycle that did affect people because the stats lowered. You know, if you send a quip card on a voyage or in a gauntlet. Your equipment can and often expires because the timers don't often show up right. But despite that, the card that's in voyage or in gauntlet is locked, so that value remains what it was when it started, so you're not penalized. However, in this case, when they made the change, it did affect the values. So that did impact people who were trying, as you said, to do missions or do other things. And, you know, I think there should have been some sort of heads up there. On the other hand, hey, there's some new equipment coming out and they say they're going to continue doing it that is cheaper, in air quotations, that provides higher stats. So it's a little bit of a balance, but did we, you know, the question is, did we really need it that quickly?
Janice, what are your thoughts on these changes?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stay on the positive side of the house here. I like that.
All right, you're off the show.
Damn it. you know, newer equipment coming in means more crew are viable that you never would have thought putting through the feature before. But yeah, it kind of does stink for the more casual player who was just throwing generic legendary equipment on just their top combined crew. Now it's a little bit harder for them. So I'm not as thrilled about that. But again, staying positive, I like the new equipment, and it means that more is probably going to be coming. How long has it been out now? Like 6 months now? So I mean, it took them a while to actually get it out there. But hey, maybe six more months, we'll see, what, another half a dozen new equipment? So yay. Follow the traits, right? The more crew you have with good traits, the more opportunities you'll have for CM powerhouses in the future, right?
All right, now before we dive into specifics, Dan, just give some general thoughts here on this.
I was actually getting pretty bored of the feature. It was the same equipment on the same crew every week, and it just felt like there wasn't a whole lot of depth to this. And with them finally coming through with their promise, because they had promised initially that we were going to receive some updates, we got them. Some of the new equipment are actually pretty interesting. They explore some new territory. They really pump up some specific crew. We'll get to that. But the fact that they are strictly better, or at the very least supplemental to the old equipment that we all had been using, just the generic ones that go on anybody with command or anybody with Psy, those were good enough. And those really took me through without a whole lot of extra thought. I think the only one of the specialized equipment I actually used happened to be the Orb of Prophecy and Change, just because the dip crew that I was using them on were so strong anyways. Just throwing that on in some cases was enough without even having to spend extra qubits on the other equipment to get through some of the nodes. So anything to change it up is good. There's some design space here for them to sell some packs too, and you know, that's great for the company, great for the longevity of the game. If they can release some equipment that are keyed to specific traits and then put those in a mixed behold and, you know, get some collateral sales because these crew are coming out a little bit stronger, a little bit of a buff there, hey, why not? That's great. You know, they're not they're not in it for goodwill here. They're in it for profit. So, you know, I one of the ones that really impressed me was the new Shackling Horror, which keys to anybody with a villain. So there are a few villains that were already getting some pretty nice equipment on them, and now they're just fantastic. Otto, you want to kind of get into that discussion here, and we'll start talking about some specifics?
Yeah, I don't want to dive too much in the meta commentary, but I will say one thing that I said before is, you know, I've seen the design flow work in other games where you release things a little bit underpowered and then buff upwards. That way you don't run up against aggrieved players who make their grievances known. So I think that being the very first change after release and continue missions was not a great look. And but, you know, iteration at all is welcome after Fleet Boss Battles was apparently kind of set on the back burner. So, yeah, let's start again with that unique equipment. You mentioned the villain one. There are three that are very tightly trait locked. They require three traits each. One of them only keys to General Chang, a very old legendary one, only keys to Carl, Guardian of Forever. And then the other one keys to four different Bajoran crew, three legendary and one super rare. Kai Winn, who was a recent giveaway, Powerwraith Cult Dukat, Rogue Kai Winn, and Bajoran Dukat. And those last four names do overlap with another villain equipment too, so These crew, especially Kaiwin, who's a newer one with greater power, could be vaulting up the charts of crew that you should be looking at. Dan, you had a big list of crew breaking down by each skill who you think should be or could be the new top name for equipment. Talk to me about that.
Yes, I'm going to recite every single one of them, not skipping one, going from crew to crew, one after another. It was really quite hypnotic. We'll talk about command first, and I will try to refrain from listing them all.
I thought you were going for the count from Sesame Street. Number three, dip, ha, 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 ha.
That's where I thought he was going.
I do have a number one, number one on the new command charts. So I was gushing over the Shackling Horror villain equipment. Apparently it has a little bit of a combo with a very old, very moldy, very suboptimal crew in Frank Hollander. Hey, Frank. And we have just a two skill. We call them skillets, command, sec, crew. But when you're using him for continuum missions, and here's what's interesting, he can become a pretty strong command node solver for you. His top end, if you have a fully maxed, fully fused Frank Hollander, he can actually achieve up to a skill power of 5,347 on his command roll. If you hit the top end of that, he's got the old equipment, ancient machined repeater equipment, which gives him a really strong command. I think that may have been buffed. Some of these old equipments got buffed a little bit while they nerfed the more generic ones. So that, in addition to the new equipment, and then whatever else you can throw on him from the old stable of gold equipment, he just gets fantastic rolls. I don't recommend anybody take their Frank Hollander retrieval chances and go ahead and max him out just to solve your command rolls. I think there's going to be some varying schools of thought on which crew really are, if at all, if there's going to be any changes to the way that we attack these continuum mission nodes. But certainly there's a lot more incentive now to talk about that with the new interesting golds like ubiquitous Borg Queen dropping from them. Gentlemen, any other thoughts on any new command opportunities to solve some of those nodes? Frank, what are you looking at for your continuum
missions? Wondering, do you get double rewards if he crits 5,347 points? I feel like you should.
I like that.
Yeah, Frank, I need you to talk about Frank here a little bit.
Well, you know, it's funny because for a long time, a lot of players have been begging for, hey, I've got these really old 2016 gold cards that are horrible. They're underpowered. They can't do anything. I'd love something to do with them. Equipment came along, and it wasn't quite the answer because it didn't incentivize you to still drag out Frank Hollander or Shinzon or Pa Wraith Colt Ducat until now. And we're seeing they've taken the request of the player base for years and said, okay, we're going to apply it here. Yes, Frank Hollander becomes an absolute insane beast for command, but as you said, ubiquitous Borg Queen that you can achieve right now, the final week that we're recording this, if you go through your continuum missions, she's like number two. And there's some other cards that are right up there with them. Of course, the old Wrathful Khan, still really good too. I agree, I would not go retrieving Frank Hollander if you don't have him just so you have a top command person. You've probably got better choices. However, if you do have a Frank Hollander and you were looking for an excuse to finish him, this could be it. This is going to be a recurring theme when we talk about these old, quote, decrepit 2016 cards. Some of them certainly are getting a big glow up here.
Okay, let's move on to some of the other skills. I have to harken back to hashtag follow the traits. I had a conversation with Big Book alum Stars and Garters years ago. Hey, dude, Pa Wraith Colt Ducat, look at all these traits. You know, he's got a couple collections now. I know his stats aren't great, but maybe he's worth taking in this behold. And, you know, I won't reiterate his response. There was some cursing involved. But now we're looking at Pa Wraith Colt Ducat as the possible number one dip option with all his unique equipment, whom, when you're done with continuum missions for the week, is going to be providing thousands more voyage power in between running those missions. So, Janice, talk to me about your dip roster with continuum missions. Are you going to stick with the old reliable emissary and that Bajoran orb, or are you going to be looking at some of the new options?
Yeah, I ran Ducat and Kaiwin through continuum missions this week just for SNGs, and I'm just enjoying seeing different faces and different equipments. I'm sure Varani is still fine, and I probably could just keep running him through and wouldn't have an issue with it, but you know, Dan mentioned earlier, the, you know, feature was getting a little stale for him, and you know, while I wasn't feeling it was stale, this is a little bit more exciting to use those. And then I do have a silly nightmare alt that is only using super rares. So Bajoran Dukat is now a powerhouse for that, and I throw him into the gauntlet sometimes, and I'm sure that there are people looking at that and be like, what the heck is going on with this Bajoran Dukat?
Yeah, that's another good follow the trade screw. At one point, he was the number one collection crew rated on Big Book. Let's get another Stars and Garters reference here as we move on to security. The number one name I see on that list, Mokbarra Worf. Dan, talk to me about some of the set crew. I've also been using Dahar Master Koloth because he gets the Sword of Kalos. Is it going to be a Klingon-dominated top names at the top of the security list?
Yeah, that Sword of Kalos really warps the format, and that's one thing that hasn't changed. Mokbarra Worf, though, also gets the benefit of an athlete equipment. Another gold equipment. These equipments also tend to be at a slight discount, especially part of the nerf with the generic equipments is that they just cost more qubits now. And so we see that some of the other more finely tuned equipments that key to specific traits cost a little bit less in general, or even, well, certainly relative to their generic equipment counterparts. Mokbarra Worf, you can just equip them in an entire gold loadout. Top to bottom, and when he does his top sec roll, winds up being up to 53-54, just massive. To put that into perspective, so the largest nodes that we've seen in Continuum missions have been just under 4,000. If you are maxing out somebody like Mokbarra Worf, even if you have already completed a node previous to the one that you're working on, and he gets the 20% nerf to his own power as he's running through, he's still going to crit whatever node, no matter what it is, coming after him if you can get him fully equipped. So one thing I'll also touch on, too, is that don't get too stuck on the BIS, the best-in-slot crew right now, because if Tilting Point continues to refine this feature and introduce new equipment in the future, these can change. So you may be chasing, you know, bad crew ad infinitum if you're always interested in getting the top, the best every single time. So sometimes less is better, and if you pick a fantastic Voyager, and some other ones on the list here, we've got Jaron Sisko, who many of you earned through the Mega recently. Fantastic Voyager still flies for me, and even more so once he has a few equipments left over on him after he hit some nodes. Also Fencing Picard, great crew in SEC is Tribbled Koloth Korax, who once you've thrown the equipments on him and solved every node in your Continuum missions easily, then he also has ancillary benefit in the Gauntlet. Fantastic matchup, because now while he's in the Gauntlet, he can still fight those Continuum missions. Putting him in the Gauntlet doesn't stop him from being able to fly in Voyages or run your missions. So all good choices there for SEC.
All right, moving on to the science charts. I see a couple OG crew in the notes, so I'm going to throw it to another OG. Frank, talk to me about the Psi crew. Labor Spock at number one, but him being a base-heavy crew, no gauntlet, no voyages, are you going to stick with him, or are you going to pivot to an option like Serac, who hits both of those other areas?
So funny enough, prior to this, good shout-out, Dan, I had been using best-in-slot crew. I'd been looking for the best Voyagers and running them through equipment. Not that that was necessarily the best choice. Everybody plays different. There's different strategies for each person. I thought for me, that's where I would get the best mileage. And then with this change, after I digested the change and got over the emotion of it, it turned out I really loved being able to take out these old cards that I had not touched and make them incredibly powerful. I ran both Laborer Spock and Serac through, equipped them both all the way up. They're both on Voyages. In fact, I have, in this last week, I have had a Voyage that had nothing but 2016 cards on it. Awesome. And it was an easy 17-hour Voyage. And it was a lot of two skillers, like Laborer Spock. So there's value in every card, even if it's not an incredible card, just the fun that you get to have, like Geno said, of rolling into Gauntlet with a 4-star Dukat and wrecking people, or somebody seeing Laborer Spock and going, what? And you go, yeah, guess what? Serac, though, for those who don't want to use a two-skiller, he is also fantastic. He is from a Mega a million years ago, easily retrievable, and he will add a lot of voyage power. You could also use Gauntlet out of it. But any of these people that you choose, any of these cards that you choose, are going to add more than just base value to your gameplay for the week.
All right, Genos, you're next up for engineering, and no relation here, but I'm going to throw to you a crew who fell out of the ugly tree, hit every branch on the way down, 1001. He's been mocked 4 years since it came out. Such an underwhelming crew, but he's got to glow up with some massively powerful equipment, the best in the game. Are you going to pivot to that fusion crew, or do you stick with the one skilled demo man, Scotty?
I grabbed the binars out of cryo because I actually was able to fuse them up organically over time, collecting my 1-0s and my 0-1, and I threw that
good pluralization. Nice.
Yes, thank you. Ensigns Kim, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I threw their unique legendary equipment on, and the cool thing was it added to both engineering and science, so I was able to use them for science and engineering through, I think, normal and elite is the second one, right? I can never remember which one.
That's right.
So unless there was like back-to-back engine psi or engine eng. So I'm really enjoying using that terrible memed crew that, nobody ever wanted and it's just a joke, and now it's a CM powerhouse. I'm having fun with it.
One more name for engineer, and I'll shout out from Dan's carefully sculpted list, temporarily detained Jet Reno, the one with the licorice. A great collection crew and someone that I recently retrieved. So as we talk about viability, utility in other areas, collection crew is something to consider as well, since you're going to want them fully fused. Dan, go
she
ahead.
She solves so many fleet boss battle nodes too, so anybody who's interested in that, you got to get her.
We're going to put that on your tombstone. Well-deserved. Dan, go ahead and wrap us up with the med options here. Are we really going for Elizabeth Dana? Is that what we're doing today?
You heard it here on the Big Book Podcast. Number one, Elizabeth Dana. Yeah, she's got some foil eyeball equipment. Whatever. Who cares? The interesting thing about the high roll on med is it's significantly lower than the command dip sex, and understandably so. They're just so much more well printed. The power creep has hit them a lot harder, a lot more sharp of a curve. So even with the optimal, the best in slot Elizabeth Daner, you're only hitting at a max of 5198 in terms of your total roll. But there are some pretty much close behind contenders that you should probably consider if you were looking to retrieve just in general. I really like some of the oldest cards among this list here. We're seeing Mycelial Culber, a name from a few years ago. It used to pop up on Behold Advice frequently, and when Retrieval first came out, was a pretty good target. Has fallen off utility, but he's got a great set of equipment that can really push him up to a pretty high roll, just under 5,000. Certainly will solve any node that you come across. Starfleet Medical Phlox, fantastic Fleet Boss Battle Crew. Almost everybody's solution to healing right now, just because of his high passives. He just gets you more damage while he heals your ship. And also a significantly high roll, and a great Voyager too once you get him fully buffed. So there are certainly some decent options, many of them in the portal for you right now. Lieutenant Ogawa, Dareth, another great healer. And Defensive Phlox, if you're looking to get a twofer and bring him into your gauntlet, get his med up to ridiculous high proficiency rolls, and then also solve some nodes while you're at it.
All right, so as we wrap up the continuum mission discussion, I guess my last bullet point would be check out these new unique equipment. If you're struggling with having enough qubits to make these items, in a lot of cases they're significantly cheaper than the generic variety, the store brand variety. So that may help you out there. Fellas, any final thoughts here?
I think this feature is turning the corner. I'm really glad. I'll echo Frank. I'm glad they've put some thought into this. This may have been, part of their initial plan, and this is just kind of unfolding in the way that they had planned. But either way, it's great to see some follow up. I'm interested again. I'm engaged, and I hope our listeners are too.
Sometimes we're quick to judgment, and it just is humbling to remember we have no idea what it takes to make a video game.
I'm gonna give some kudos for them actually putting out a curated list of exactly what changed, other than us having to go and figure out what changed in the back end and then push it out, and then everyone gets upset. At least it was all out there, and also in a timely fashion. It was like the same day, right?
It was. Yep. When they do wrong, I will hold them accountable and I will say so. But also when they do something right, that it sounds silly that, they should earn praise for just doing what's expected. But in this case, sometimes when communications hasn't been in the best in the past, and there's also been turmoil behind the scenes, et cetera, I think that this deserves a big attaboy from them, because they had it prepared and it was well put together and it was ready for the community to where, when people said, hey, why did things change? Oh, okay, here's a list. Mm-hmm. And they weren't bouncing around to the various, social media channels trying to find an answer.
Yeah, the most important thing here is No Name Namer got to play Sea of Thieves for 3 more hours instead of digging through the game files trying to figure out all those changes. So he thanks you, and we thank you. All right, let's talk about Data as Masaka, the new Honor Hall crew. Now, as the youngest person on this call right now, I put in the notes, no Riz. This is not a very flashy crew to come out of the Honor Hall. If you just look at his scorecard on his crew page, bigbook.app, it looks like some random event crew that's come out. Tier 4, kind of a good, not great on voyages, good, not great in events or shuttles. All right, I'm going to pull the third stars reference of this podcast. Who is this crew for? We'll do roundtable at the end whether or not you're buying him. Spoiler alert, I won't be. Frank, let's start with you. As someone who has, do you have 3 Kalesses? Is that right? An Honor Hall enjoyer. All right, will you be going for this one?
So, of course, Frank Prime bought him and froze him, but the account I actually play on, no, not buying him. And as the extraordinarily well-written note on bigbook.app for this card, widely considered to be an episode of Star Trek that this is from. This is widely to be considered a card in Star Trek timelines. It's a data card, and data cards have engineering and skills, and I've just come to look at the Honor Hall not as like killer amazing cards, but rather representations of cards in key moments from certain episodes, like Timeless Chakotay or the Borg Queen 7, even though her art's not right, and now Data with his sleep mask on.
All right, Dan, you're talking about looking for analogs in the Honor Hall, and there aren't a ton. Most of them have been power creeped out over the years, but you know, someone like Kalos, who has gauntlet ability, Captain Tribble with his massive single skill for continue missions, those are crew we can get excited about shelling out honor for. What, in your estimation, would set Data as Masaka apart?
It's just the art. I don't think there's much else really in terms of meat on the bone here. He's an Eng primary. The only other Eng primary we have in the Honor Hall right now, Nanoprobe Flux. Very old crew. Still serviceable, but not anything that I would recommend. And unfortunately, yeah, sleep apnea, Masaka, Data is not being shoulder to shoulder with a 5-year-old crew, 6-year-old crew isn't a great place to be. I think our listeners who were looking to invest 100,000 honor plus citations would probably be better served waiting maybe 2 or 3 weeks. We'll defer to our esteemed colleague Janos here on how long until the next honor sale and see how much further that 100,000 honor investment might go. Janos, what are your thoughts on this card?
Well, the honor sale is soon, by the way, and I can't decide between like a masquerade joke or a CPAP joke.
Sleep crapnea.
That's a good one. All right. We didn't discuss this before we recorded here. You're stealing my jokes. Anyways, yeah, Data has some eclectic traits, at least, you know, that are unusual, a strange combination, spiritual, artist. We could see collections for those in the future, but only 2 now. That's all I got.
I did tell these guys before we hit record, if you just want to groan and grunt into the microphone, we'll take that as your submission evaluation of this crew.
Is that good?
You know, it's not actually that he's that bad. It's just that he's that uninspired. You know, if this were an event crew, I think we'd all want to pitch in and get a copy or two. Eng primary data, sure, that's great. But for the cost required, I just think that's a no-go for me. Guys, one word, yes or no?
No.
No.
Okay. See, now that's the curse. If you ask for a short answer, you never get one. Let's move on to a crew who we're all going to wish was Data as Masaka instead, Wixabon. From a Voyager episode, the greatest mutton chops I've ever seen. So he does have that going for him, but not much else. His scorecard is sort of a burnt sienna color. There's no green lights here. The best I can do is I grow for positives would be 3 collections with 3 viable traits coming up. But he is, as we just talked about, an event card, so lower barrier of entry. Let's do reverse order. Genos, is this a card that you are going to event for?
If I accidentally get a copy, either from the event or from recap packs, I don't think I'll finish him anytime soon, unless more of his traits hit. Merchant, duelist, scoundrel, Talaxian, maybe? Civilian? But yeah, so no.
Okay, anyone else wanna go to bat for the mighty Casey here?
This card should have been left in the Delta Quadrant.
I feel like I need to splice in some sound effect at the end of that comment, but Dan, are you going to save your breath for... Dan, are you saving your breath for a different card, or is there something to poke at here?
I feel like lately that some of these Mega Reward Crew, maybe it's because we're all excited for the Mega and the free 4 out of 5 gold card that we get, that we maybe put in a little extra effort, and maybe the numbers are a little bit better, the turnout is a little bit better for these competitions, and I feel like some of these crew are just getting dialed back a little bit too much, and Wixieban is just, you know, we talked about pushing the envelope on the Voyage exclusives. His mail got returned to sender. Man, it's just, especially on the heels of our last Voyage exclusive Grady that we received, exact same skill order even, and just so far behind, you know, 100 ranks behind Grady. You know, there's crew that you can retrieve from the portal that just do so much more for your sec dip primary secondary. Why bother? Yeah, I agree with Genos. He'll just, you know, if I do happen to get a copy, and I'll do my best to avoid that, he'll just sit around and wait for himself to duplicate through packs, and that's about it.
Okay, let's move on to a little more exciting topic then. A new Voyager crew collection. A very big one. Looks like we're getting skill boosts at every third milestone. Some of the names to consider. Borg Queen goes from the number one collection crew to the number one collection crew, so she's even number one-ier. We have a few former Janeway Mega recurring, including the current one, Concerning Flight Janeway. I see some names like in the previous Convergence Day event, Kashyk was there as a great Voyager. He's up to 4 collections. Genos knew before I did that Gotano Retz has snuck up to 6 collections. So are there any other names that you guys are looking at specifically for the collection value who may have been buoyed by this new Voyager group?
I have a few that moved to the top of my list using the BigBook.app proprietary collection rating. Colonel Q and Beowulf Kim have jumped up in my list because of their current collections and their continued possibilities for more.
Okay, let me ask you guys then, is this just now a foregone conclusion that we're going to get show megas, rather show collections for each show? I know in a previous discussion, Bennett said, well, that's not really the plan, yet here we are with a Voyager collection, so... Frank, I know you're going to collect them all anyways, but let's say you weren't. Let's say you're the average Geo player. Is that just something you pencil in going forward, or does this collection move the needle for you?
Well, once is an anomaly, twice is a coincidence, 3 times is a pattern, and at this point going forward, when a card is released, if it's just even a super rare from an event that you look at and it's a faction event, you say, well, I'm not going to get that 4th star on it, and he's not really great, so I'll airlock him. You also have to look at, oh, wait, well, he's also from the next generation, and we haven't gotten a next generation collection yet. So maybe I do need to keep him because that's going to pop up eventually. You do have to err on the side of caution and assume that show collections probably will be a thing. Interspliced with small, you know, small ones like Ryder that we'll touch on later, and then you get a massive 200-something person, you know, show collection.
Okay, so that sort of brings me back around to talking about skill sets, where we opened the show. Dan, we had this discussion even a couple hours ago today, the way that skill boosts from collections are unbalanced. So Med and Eng get lower priority. That means that even if they have a great unboosted score, they're not going to necessarily keep pace with their contemporaries. I mean, again, we're talking about minute percentages, but when you're looking at one crew or the other, that really does matter. So as we look at that command dip, whatever, heavy boosts, that does kind of skew things. You know, on release, we lament those bad skill sets, but they look better in power because of these back-end boosts. How does that affect your crew prioritization? Are you looking still at those Eng-Med crew, even though their power level may not be looking as good, or do you just roll with the punches and take these command dip crew that they're shelling out?
I've been avoiding more and more command up crew. I do like rounding up my roster and collecting whenever I can a good, even a medium strength med or eng crew that's serviceable. And we just got off talking off of Data as Misaka, right? You know, a serviceable eng crew that we all poo-pooed, but the cost is too high. You know, he's playable, and if he came through other means, we'd be fine with him. And so any crew, yeah, you can retrieve or earn through some reasonable means that don't require breaking your piggy bank of honor. Certainly that's great. And whenever you can pick up any skill boosts also that are going to help those skills achieve even higher levels. And looking at the new Voyager collection, that's one thing that stands out. So being one of the most underrepresented skills in terms of boosts from Starbase and from collection bonuses, we have Eng and we have Med, both of them together form the lowest in terms of boosts that you'll receive. And for the new Voyager collection, The Way Home, the very first milestone, you earn a full base stat boost for Med. And then later on, down in a really achievable threshold of 140 frozen crew for, and that includes all of your crew, including your commons, your green, your blue crew, they all count for this. There's a really great reward in terms of both a base stat boost for Med and your proficiency rolls as well, helping you out in the gauntlet. I really like these show-based collections because they're kind of like icing on the cake, right? So if we look at Follow the Traits, hashtag Follow the Traits, we have been looking very concretely at what the ceiling for collections for all these crew might be. But now we have this bonus, right? Because if every crew has a bonus linked to their show, you know, whether it be animated or in the future, you know, the Next Generation collection, dubbing it now the Greatest Generation. There's your name tilting point if you want to take it. These crew now all of a sudden get a little bit of extra value, and these are really great also for newer rosters, just because these bonuses are going to help you out earlier in the game, and so certainly for those lower quality crew that may just debut with fewer traits. They tend to be older. These greens and blues that you're freezing in the earlier stage of the game just tend not to have great collection value, and this will just do nothing but help them.
So, Frank, you know, early on when I started the Big Book, what, 2018, I thought, well, okay, let me try to give advice as if you had every crew in the game, and which ones would be most useful if you did. So you do have every crew in the game. Talk to us a little bit about the disparity between those command dip crew and someone like Simon Van Gelder, who's coming out as a med primary. Do they pull even more weight relative to crew who have the same power level?
It's noticeable when you put everything in a vacuum. And of course, you know, to your point, it's really hard to give advice tailored to individual needs because there's 40 different approaches with 40 different people that could walk up to the Big Book right now and say, well, this is how I play my game. And the advice we give sometimes is not tailored best for them, but the best we can do is look at it in a vacuum and say, well, this is the best it will ever be, and go down from there. That being said, you know, diplomacy 40% base, command 38% base, med 34, engineering 34, you know, things that do not equate at all. And when you look at a brand new crew that's coming out that does have great skills like Med or Psy, in this case with Dr. Simon, sadly his skills are not going to be as fantastic as someone who also just came out with command in the front, like the Borg Queen. She's got a huge jump over someone that should be equally as powerful given their ratings, but because of the lack of stat boost over the years, and this has been a thing for many years, it's not new, those crew fall behind, but those are also less in number. Out of the 1530 whatever crew we have right now, very few percentage wise are med or psi or eng primary.
So just to put a bow on this, I'll kind of mix and match some of the topics we talked about recently. In the top 100 Voyagers, of those from the show Voyager, you know, the collection crew, there are 16 of them. 15 are either command dip or sec primaries. The only one that isn't, Concerning Flight Janeway. So, you know, when we talk about crew that punch above their weight class, this is certainly one. You can go back last week's podcast and listen to what we had to say about her, but it is a little bit more panning for gold, diamond in the rough hunting to look for these crew who are going to avoid the inflated stat boosts. Okay, moving on to everyone's favorite segment, the super rares. No, don't facepalm at that. Paris will do it for you. Facepalm Paris in the game. Now, For new players who have been playing for a couple months now, I believe, don't quote me, this is the sixth Eng primary super rare from events in the last 3 months, so they've definitely been giving us a lot of that particular skill. Genos, what are you looking for with Paris that sets him apart?
The thing that I notice the most about Facepalm Paris here is that we're finally seeing a resurgence, if you can call it that, in the writer trait. So we got that collection maybe, what, like 2 years ago now, and we haven't had a writer enter the game in almost a year. So translate that into actual gameplay. For myself, I've got over 1,000 immortalized crew, and I only have 8 out of 10 writers immortalized. So grabbing a super rare here for my 9th one and then making it a small hop, skip, and a jump to 10, that's huge. And you're getting him 4 out of 4 because there is a galaxy component to his event. So this is an easy grab. If you're a newer player, yeah, Eng primary, serviceable Voyager, Paris gets events intermittently, so it's not bad, but you know, that's what I'm looking for there, is the three collections highlighted by Ryder for me.
Yeah, a couple of those Ryders are not in Portal. Quinn is an episode 10 reward, and then Data and Spot at the end of a collection, so that pool may be even smaller than you realize. Let's move on to another super rare. We won't dally over the rim a lot here. Bella Oxmix. Dan, I'm going to throw it to you, but you have to do it in a New York gangster accent. Talk to me about Bella Oxmix.
Hey, so we got this guy here, right? And we need to rub him out, right? So I can't.
Wasn't it Chicago, not New York?
Oh, was it? I didn't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Gangsters.
I didn't read the Parallel Planet Development book. Sorry about that.
Completely different kind of pizza, which is very important.
Big fan.
One of the few TOS characters I remember just because of his inscrutable last name. I couldn't figure out what Oxmix was. It sounded like some sort of meat-based pancake. I don't know. And apparently it's not even that. If you look on memory, it's okay, Oxmix. Okay. I don't know. Anyways, getting past the minutiae here, we have a pack purple crew, so red alert. Not a lot of people are going to have this, at least not in the next 6 months to a year until he hits Portal. Is he worth pulling on a pack for? Let's see. He's debuting with four collections, so the primary use for purples nowadays for people that might be pulling on a pack is just to get some ticks on those collections. Strangely enough, one of those collections is casual. For the man in a $5,000 three-piece pinstripe suit, he's casual. Anyways, you know, I guess he wanted to get out of the game, so we can kind of bend our minds around that. Speaking of minds, Criminal Minds, the collection that everybody, I think by default, has maxed, because it is a 10 threshold collection containing 17 criminal purples in the portal that people just randomly pick up and freeze. So I don't know. He looks probably about as good as Facepalm Paris, but just significantly higher cost to get him and to get him to max value. He does have a little bit of a blip on his radar for being a little bit of arena usage. He's 350% hammer, which is good for the Captain League where you use all purples. But if you already have Hane, another Gregory Itzen card that you may have collected after some of our rave reviews on prior podcasts, he is exactly the same stats except for his passives. So you may already have what Bella can bring to your ship battles.
Yeah, you mentioned the criminal collection, and we're at 41 of those right now. So if it does get an expansion, 40 seems like the likely target. He may swing back around in value at that point, but yeah, as a super rare, you can kind of afford to freeze and forget, and if that does come around, good for you, I guess. Before we move on to our last crew, you know, one quick spell check note, Namer. Bella's flavor, does that say prominent lotion male or Iotian? Regardless, onto another prominent lotion male. Frank, talk to me about Harry Mudd. We finally have him up on the big book. You can look at that incredible belt, that boyish grin, that rakish 10-gallon hat. Well, it's a 4-gallon hat, but how happy are you to have this crew presumably in the game very soon?
Ecstatic. You know, the world lost a fantastic campy actor in Roger Carmel back in 1986, and for 40 years, his family has stopped his likeness in all forms in Trek and in other properties. You could not get a t-shirt of him. You could not see him in a game. You couldn't see him in a trading card, nothing. But hey, times are changing, and Harry Mudd is my name, and here he is. And I don't care if the big book initially rates him tier 4. He's tier 1 in my heart, much like Lacutus. The art is right on point. That belt buckle is just a thing of beauty. He is a dip primary, but a strong Voyager nonetheless. He's got 4 viable collections waiting to hit. He's a 400% nuke in arena. He's just got a lot going for him. And if this is the second straight month of Continuum missions giving a really good crew 4 out of 5, I think he's absolutely worth dragging some of your old 2016 golds out of storage, putting some cheap equipment on them, and earning them.
Well, now there's
bring it back around.
Now there's your segue, because we don't do too much guessing on the big book, but we're assuming he may be a Continuum mission reward. So, Janos and Dan, I'm going to give you guys the last word here. If they continue this trend here, started by Borg Queen, and he is in the Continuum mission, A, what does that say for his availability? And B, is that a great positive for Continuum missions for the incentive?
Yeah, with Continuum missions kind of being an endgame player prospect, it can be tough, especially for mid-game and newer players to look at a card like this and think, oh, this is passing me by. We're not sure how Tilting Point is going to handle any future offerings, whether this will be a rotation and he'll come back around again, whether they'll eventually enter the portal. It's doubtful, but it might happen. So, you know, is it worth pushing and really straining your roster, maybe making a spend to try to earn a card like this? And Harry Mudd, man, he's just so iconic. I can't say it's all right to skip him, but again, we're looking at a dip primary command secondary crew. He has tremendous collection upside, even though only debuting with 3 collections, one of them being Criminal Mind, which I just crapped on. But the but his 8 traits, 9 traits that he debuts with, all could possibly hit. All of them except for maybe human could possibly hit on you know a collection in the future. But that's just what we're looking at here, is his future value. His value to your roster today, if you have the type of roster that can earn Harry Mudd, you know, if I were looking to achieve him and I didn't have the power level needed, you might want to look for the second time around for him. I hate to say it, but that's my take.
I think, and I don't have a citation for this, but I do believe that the developers did mention that the crew that were going to be in the Continuum missions would eventually enter the portal, but I don't recall 100%, so I'm going to say 83% chance that that's going to happen.
Okay.
I want to mention, first of all, the piping on the side of his pants. I think it's fantastic. I love the embroidery there. I think that's maybe like 83% as good as the belt. I'm just going to keep hammering that percentage like Barney Stinson right there. I'm going to really enjoy earning him and then citing him up over the next 4 weeks, if that is where he's going to be. I don't know where else he could enter the game, but if he does enter anywhere other than the web store, and they said that's not going to happen anymore, I'm going to hold you to that. And I'm going to be in your area next week, so if you put him in the web store, I'm going to find you. Just kidding, Ben. I swear I'm kidding. I'm going to enjoy using him, even though you know there are other cards that can do what he can do. I'm really going to like him.
BigBook.app and Large Tome LLC have no affiliation with Genos Adenian or any harm that comes to Ben from Genos.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us this week on the Big Book Podcast. Don't forget to tune in 2 weeks to hear about how Wixabon has aged on our rosters. And I leave you with the blessing, may all your muds be hairy.